On BBC Radio 4, Fee Glover brings together four mothers who, for various reasons, have left their children to discuss the shared experience of being apart from them.
Sometimes I feel like a bit of an aunt, you know, like a fairy godmother kind of person. Still with the younger one, it's not very close. And it's sort of up and down. And sometimes I'm quite relieved when it is normal and they, you know, they make it, they're naughty and stuff, because then I feel as if they're more relaxed and it's all a bit normal. But yeah, we have sort of regular 3 or 4 times a week I see them. So it's because they just live about 20 minutes away. But that was nothing to do with the courts. That's just as time got on, they decided that they wanted to see me.
What's your story?
My daughter's 10. Basically, to cut a long story short, I left my husband after he was impossible to live with, took my daughter back to my mum's, who was elderly, and my mum died, and then I was homeless for a while, so I couldn't have my daughter. And obviously, because of my job, because I travel, he somehow managed to get hold of my daughter, and basically has been keeping me out of her life ever since. I've seen her, after my mother died, I think I saw her about 3 times. But he stopped me from seeing her and made up excuse after excuse. He met someone else, she got pregnant. He's not now with that woman, but he's done everything he can to keep me out of her life, and I haven't spoken to her since last December, and I haven't seen her for 2.5 years.
Sam, what's your story?
My daughter's 18 now, and she does live with me now, but we didn't live together from when she was 10 to 15. She went to live with my mum. I asked my mum to look after her because through my personal addiction to drugs and alcohol, I wasn't able to look after her. And even though I saw her through that time, I was kind of there in body but not in mind, and I didn't parent her in any way, shape or form. She's been back living with me just over 2 years now. And that transition has been a really, really difficult one, obviously. She went a young girl and she came back a teenager.
Beverly, what's your tale?
I've got 3 daughters, 21, 18, 17. The 2 eldest ones are at university. The youngest one lives with her dad. I moved out when I asked him for a divorce, but only because he wouldn't, flatly refused. And I knew that the divorce was going to be long and bitter, which it actually still is. Although we're technically divorced, he's still in the matrimonial home.
Where does that leave you?
In rented accommodation down the road, even though I was the breadwinner throughout our relationship. I mean, our roles were reversed. I was the bloke, if you like. And he couldn't afford to leave, and 2, I was the one who wanted the divorce, so I felt it was my kind of responsibility. In fact, I've taken everything on my shoulders. But it means now that I'm 3 years in rented without my kids, which I thought it was going to be about when the estate agent said it's a 6-month rental period minimum. I laughed and said, I'm not going to be in rented for more than 4 months, and then I'm going to sell the house and move in with my girls. And, you know, and they've one by one gone off to university and still can't sell a house because he won't bring the price down. And so he's sitting in my house, which my career has bought, and refuses to sell, even though the court order says he has to sell the house.
I know that all of your circumstances are very different, and also we are fully aware of the fact that your children aren't present in the room with us, and neither are your ex-partners, so we obviously cannot name names in particular, because we can't give them a right to reply. But obviously, all of you have so much in common. And one of the things that I wondered immediately was, did all of you have Beverly's feeling that at the beginning of this, when you moved out of a difficult relationship and away from your children, whether you all thought this is just a temporary thing? You know, I'm never going to be sitting round a table in 2013, 14, discussing not being with my children.
Yeah,
was
yeah,
it the same?
Yeah. For me, like, even though I made a decision to ask my mum to look after her, and I said, I really thought within a year I'd have her back. And the first few months after I asked my mum, I cried myself to sleep every night. It was just the worst thing in the world, just to be separated from her, even though at the time I thought it was for the best, You know, obviously I didn't understand how that would affect my daughter being separated from me. It was the hardest thing that, you know, even when I think about it now, I can remember how that feeling inside is like nothing else. That
separation anxiety.
It's just, oh, it's...
But we're designed to... It's the survival instinct, isn't it? Mother and child
absolutely.
And looking after your young. And it's a very... It's hardwired into us, this protective thing, and it
most
you feel like actually being sick when you're
yeah I think as well for me, because my circumstances were that I was in addiction and I was in an abusive relationship at the time, you know, the guilt that came with it was unbearable. Something that just I wouldn't wish it on anybody, you know.
When you left, how long did you think you'd be away from your daughter for?
Not like this. My mum was ill, and I didn't. He made me move down to West Country. The marriage was probably over before we left, but I wanted to save my marriage because I wanted my daughter to have two parents. And then when I got down there, my mum had another heart attack. I couldn't bear to be there. And one day I just got up and took my daughter and came back. And things were okay for a while, but obviously because of my job, she had to go back to my husband, and things were okay to begin with. And when he met someone else, everything changed, and he became... Even now, I mean, he's taken more or less, he's taken savings, he's got all my furniture, he's got all my possessions, doesn't let me see my daughter, just and nasty. I can't believe that's the man I married. It's been a really tough 7 years.
That separation anxiety that you talked about, Beverly, how does it manifest itself? I mean, when you're away from your children, have any of you managed to, you know, find joy and happiness and liberation at all? Is it with you all the time that your children aren't where they should be?
I, like you, I did a lot of crying. It was, you know, you have to just to let off steam, don't you? Otherwise, if you start internalising stuff, you make yourself ill. But yes, it's a funny old thing, really, because on the one hand, you've got this awful tugging in your guts, and weighed down by guilt and all sorts of things, and everything you ever wanted for yourself and your children, expectations of yourself and your own memories of your own childhood as well, wanting to sort of replicate a decent, loving environment for your children, and the disappointment with having failed at that is huge. There's a huge weight to carry around. But at the same time, for me, there was an enormous feeling of relief, actually, and liberation. And yes, you know, after sort of being, I mean, my relationship lasted for 19 years, but, you know, the last sort of 8 years of that, I was terribly lonely. There was no intimate contact at all. And so being essentially a single woman again was fantastic because I started to live again. There was that... You know, on the one hand, I was terribly, terribly unhappy, and on the other hand, I have this huge sense of relief.
Did any of the rest of you have that sense of relief that you'd left a relationship that was not functioning?
A sense of relief, but it's almost like you're living in limbo. You can't move on because although you can't even start a relationship with anyone, I don't think, properly, because there's always this guilt and this longing to have that life back with your child. It's just like you're in this limbo. I mean, I had to take antidepressants. Obviously, I'm not on them anymore. But yeah, the whole it's just like you're lost, you know, in the grief all the time. But something that's missing inside you.
You do sort of feel in limbo, and you feel as if you're when you're sort of functioning in the outside world and working, and you know, maybe some social interaction. You feel as if you're bit of an actor, that it's a bit fake. And also, something I've noticed about men and women in this situation is that men will say, you know, if you ask them about themselves, they'll say, oh, I've got two children and they're with my wife, and like people don't think anything of it. But they think if it's a woman, people will think it's very strange, and they'll assume that, you know, there's something suspicious, or you've abused them, or they've been taken away. And
you get the horse's eyes, don't you? People look at you like that.
Oh, yeah. Yeah. And they'll
something's not right here.
Yeah, they'll ask you. People that you don't know will feel quite free to interrogate you.
There's a stigma attached,
There is a huge stigma that men don't have, I think.
Yes, With a woman, yeah.
I don't think people say it, but you can just tell. And he's like, you don't want to go into your whole life story.
No, not
but
all the time,
you feel that you have to explain to people. Now, hang on a minute. No, whoa. Before you make up your mind about me, can I just take you back 10 years? You know, and you feel like you have to explain your whole life story. I mean, it's exhausted me. It's exhausted me just standing my own corner and saying, well, actually, the reasons why I left were these, and these, and constantly looking for approval.
But before you talked about the horse's eyes, the people who shy away.
Yes, I think I made that up. Yes,
yeah. It's good. I like the image. And clearly, I mean, you all nodded around the table. You've clearly all had that reaction from people who've basically, in a more radio-friendly way, they've gone...
Do you know, I went into the pub a few months after I left the home, and there was a guy in there who I thought I'd always got on with. And he said, oh, how are you doing? I said, yeah, great. And he said... So, do you see your kids much? And I just kind of chatted and said, well, you know, they're teenagers. Yeah, I see them on, you know, regularly enough. And he made a very pointed remark of, you know, and daggers, looked at me daggers. And I wasn't expecting it at all. So I just kind of rolled with the punch and just kind of made some remark, you know. But as I left the pub, I got more and more and more angry. And I was so close to going round to his house, knocking on the door and making an idiot of myself, actually, probably. In fact, that still might happen.
Okay. And it's here on tape. Yes. How would all of you, before this happened in your own lives, have looked at a woman who had left their children?
I think it depends on what the reasons were, really. But.
And you would have stopped yourself and asked yourself what the reasons would be. Because what I'm getting at is exactly what you've already put into words. It's the stigma, and it's just there's just the thing, the mum thing, isn't there? That perhaps this generation is the first that can really challenge. Women have not been able to leave before they've probably stayed.
Well, I'm 50. I don't know about anyone else.
I'm 50.
I've reached an age now where I realise that it's always, you know, there's two sides to every story. And if a woman leaves her children, it's for good reason. You know, that's for sure. No, and it will probably be the hardest thing she ever has to do. And so it's not a decision taken lightly at all. But she's still judged very harshly for it.
If you take away the judgment, the feelings, would you accept that they would be exactly the same for a father leaving his children? That it would be the hardest thing that he might have to do too?
Yes, but the woman has the added difficulty of socially it being very unacceptable.
Mm. Have all of you always... answered people's questions very honestly, or have you found ways of just deflecting that whole conversation?
No, all my colleagues at work, I've just been totally honest with them. But, you know, even my own family, my own sister, she was like, oh, you shouldn't have done this, shouldn't have done that. But it's very easy for people to actually point and say what they should have done. She wasn't in that situation. Probably I should never have left. I should have stayed in my house. The mortgage was in my name. But because of my job and my daughter and my mum was ill, I just made all these decisions. And I was just trying to do the right thing. And in hindsight now, I should have just stayed put and told him to go.
Women like that do tend to end up in the better situation. If they change the locks, chuck the man out, get the solicitor, they seem to end up, if you're on the offensive, and they always say in family courts, oh, it must be conciliatory, it's not adversarial. The people that win are the people that are very adversarial and they very aggressive. The other person's on the back foot. And if one person digs their heels in and says, whether it's a man or a woman, and says, you know, you're not going to see the children, they'll win, basically. That's what my experience has
that's
been,
very
meeting
sad,
other
isn't
people.
It? You want to do things in a fair way. Mm.
When you did first move out, did you at least keep in contact with them? You know, in those first weeks and months, were you still at the school gates? Were you still, you know, doing
the
daily stuff?
We lived so close to the school that they always walk. That was the plan. I could stand on the doorstep in my dressing gown and slippers and say goodbye, and they would walk to school.
You bought a catchment house.
Yes,
that's what you're
absolutely.
Saying.
Absolutely, that's. So that the little flat that I bought round the corner was actually closer to the school than the matrimonial home, so that they could pop back to mine for tea and maybe spend the night and all this sort of thing. But actually they chose not to, because kids like the security of their own home and their own beds and their own stuff, and I certainly didn't kind of try and get there. You know, I didn't ask for their company, because I'd rather sort of deal with that by myself.
Sam, your daughter's 18 now, and you've mentioned that it's been a difficult time, her coming back to live with you after being away for so long. How is your level of honesty with her about what you went through and about what you felt when you were away from her?
It's been very honest, I guess, because she witnessed so much of what went on before she went to live with my mum and during. And
how old was she when she went to live with your mum?
10.
10, okay.
Yeah. So a couple of years before she went to live with my mum, she witnessed my deterioration and the abusive relationship that I was in. So she was kind of witness to a lot of that stuff. And then while she was living with my mum, she kind of saw me deteriorate even more, which wasn't the plan. And so when she came back to live with me, you know, she came back with a lot of anger and a lot of unanswered questions. And I guess a lot of she didn't trust me at all. So through that, she would scream and shout and yell and throw a lot of things at me verbally over quite a long period of time. Once the anger was lessening and we were able to communicate on a different level, I've been as honest with her as I possibly can. And not only have I been honest with her, but when she felt safe enough, I guess, she was completely honest with me.
So what kind of things did she tell you that really surprised you?
She told me that there was a time that she didn't want to see me at all. And it was only because of my mum keeping our relationship together. My mum kind of told her she had to see me. I can't imagine what that could have been like for her. I mean, she told me how it was for her witnessing certain things around the abuse that had gone on before, and how she'd hidden in cupboards and stuff like that, and how when I left her to go out for 5 minutes and I was gone for a few hours kind of thing, and, you know, she tried to cook and fend for herself in those times. And when she was telling me these things, fortunately, I was in a strong enough place to just be able to sit there and listen and not try and say yes, but, and it was because of this. And she didn't just tell me straight. She was crying and she looked like a little girl. And I could just see the pain coming out of her. You know, all I could do was say thank you. This was after about a year and a half of us living under the same roof and having a lot of fallouts that we managed to get to that place. And I guess that was a massive turning point. And I'm so thankful and grateful to have this second opportunity for this relationship.
How was the decision made? Like, for your daughter to come back to live with you, did she suddenly... And have you not had this, if I may ask, just interesting, has your daughter ever said when you've had arguments, oh, I'm going back to live with Granny, and... or is that... She hasn't played you off or...
I think initially she... Yeah, it was a difficult time for her, but she wanted to come back to live with me. When I got myself... clean and sober, and she could see me starting to do well, she wanted to come back to me. Yeah. And to be fair, that's the one thing that I always wanted more than anything else, was to finish what I'd started. It was my... That's I was mum, so that's what I needed to be, because I didn't feel like I had been mum at all, because my mum took on that role of parenting while she was living under my mum's roof. And then when I did get myself clean and sober, it was really difficult to watch my mum parenting, you know? It was just like, get out of my way. So all the roles became quite strained for a while we were resettling back into the proper roles, if that's the way to put it, you know, like my mum being grandma, me being mum my daughter being child, you know, it was quite difficult to kind of establish those roles again.
And what about filling in the gaps? Because there must be so many things that you weren't really, really around for. I mean, if you've got daughters, you've got puberty, you've got periods, you've got boys, you know, you've got all the stuff that you must know that your daughters are going through and you're not seeing them on a day-to-day basis.
Well, mine don't really like being asked too much about what happened 2 years ago and what happened 3 years ago. They just seem to be in the present and the future.
So it's stuff that you've got to just...
Yes, stuff,
You've got to just sit on it. It's your stuff.
Sort of stuff, yeah.
And actually, do they say that to you in a wider context? Do they say, you know, they're your problems, Mum. You just got to stop talking to me about what's happening.
I don't really tell them that I have problems with it, but yes, it is difficult, you know, when you see other little children and slightly older children and you sort of think, oh, you know, I've missed that stage.
Aside from that period that you had when the drink and the drugs were in control, would you say that you're a good mum?
I would now, yeah. Now I feel I do as good a job as I possibly can, most definitely. Before, I could have done a better job. That was a difficult situation. I was quite young when I had her. And I was on my own from the very start, and I was scared and lonely, and I was too scared to ask for help. And over the years, it just kind of deteriorated, really.
What about the rest of you? Do you, you know, hand on heart, think that you're good mums? Did you find motherhood easy? I mean, it can look like a beautiful, warm, inviting ocean, and it's chilly when you dive in.
I think I found it quite hard, because I had my daughter when I was quite... you know, later in life, and I'd always had my career, so I didn't find it a natural. I was the best that I could be, but I think there was so much going on in my life with his infidelity and my mum being ill that I didn't really have the best chance at motherhood, really.
Do you keep things for her along the way in life in the hope that one day you'll be able to?
No, I don't actually. But someone said you should actually put your thoughts down every day, what you think. I photocopy everything I write to her. And sometimes I write to her, I don't know what to say. Because you don't know what to say. You know, you have to. The solicitor says you can't say this, you can't say, oh, mummy's going to see you soon, you can't give them hope. This is what I'm told. You can't actually even express yourself properly. Just have to say, Mummy loves you and misses you and she hopes to see you soon. And it's... almost sometimes you just feel like you can't even write because you just feel so emotionally drained. Mm. People don't understand, you know, you have to play this, almost like this game to actually keep on top of the... I've learned so much over the last few years. I just feel like I'm in this game, that my husband's always got this upper hand. And I just, as I say, once again, I just feel the family courts are failing people. Mm. That is what I feel. The biggest thing is you wonder what she's been told and what she thinks. Does she think Mummy doesn't love her? And
how do you feel about your motherhood status?
Oh, motherhood status.
Did you find it easy?
I did. Well, not easy, but I loved it. I did love it, yes, I did. Thrive on it, and I hadn't always, you know, as planned to be a mother, and you know, some little girls dream of having babies and things, but when it happened it was the right time. And but no, I don't feel like a good mother now.
Do you think one day you might?
Hopefully, as time goes on. But there's still a lot of guilt, because like you, I was the one that instigated
the split.
Mm-hmm. And I think there's still, you know, they still blame me for that, and you know, so I'm the black sheep really for that. So
I mean, I found it very, very difficult when they were little, because I had three under five and two in nappies. Mm. So that was very tough, trying to have a career at the same time and run a home. So keeping all the balls in the air was particularly difficult.
Do you think that what happened further down the line has anything to do with having a tough start at the beginning? Because it's interesting to note that three of you felt you had a pretty tough start at the beginning.
Well, babies are tough. Well, I think so. I think any mum at the school gate who, you know, looks like she's doing it with no effort at all, is either a very good actress or lying.
Or has a nanny.
Mm. Oh, yeah. Yes. Yes, option three.
And what do you hope for your daughter? I mean, obviously, that you get to know her better.
I hope that she one day will want to know the truth and that she won't judge and blame me. I just hope we can rebuild a relationship and I can have the relationship I had with her that I have with my mum. But I don't think it's going to be easy.
You know, when you was asking me earlier about the honesty thing, my daughter would say things to me that were true about what had gone on, but she would say them in trying to get a reaction, wanting to make me feel bad. And I would say to her, you cannot make me feel any worse about it all than I do already. But I would just seriously hope that I could pass on to another woman maybe in the same situation that it is possible to come through a difficult time. I know my situation is very different from these other ladies, but things can work out.
I'm really in admiration of how you've rebuilt your relationship with your daughter, because I have it quite often, even now, quite thrown back in my face.
You're feeling, you're very oversensitised, I think, just because because of your own guilt.
Yes.
Oh, yeah.
I mean, I let them get away with much more than I would get had I seen what would happen. I would never have left. That sounds terrible.
No, I totally agree.
Because it's not worth it. It's really not worth it.
I would have rather have actually stayed and been miserable than to actually have gone through all this.
The price was too high, but obviously I didn't see, because as you say about the renting thing, you think, oh, it's only going to be like for a few months or a couple of weeks, and then it ends up being months.
So maybe all these people who don't jump from their dead-end relationships, you know, where they're literally just cohabiting under the same roof and desperately unhappy, actually can do have the foresight to see what we've all been through, and that's the reason why they don't.
I do worry. I mean, you know, I don't worry about your daughter because it seems she's so aware and balanced, but I think with my older one, she attributes everything to me leaving her dad, and she uses that all the time.
Everything that you're saying just sounds so familiar. Yeah. It's their own process. They need to process their own feelings and and they're teenagers anyway, and the confusions that go on being a teenager and hormones and... It doesn't sound abnormal. I know it's really difficult for you, right now, really difficult. But you're right, you know, like, the blame, because you feel so guilty of what's going on, it's going to tug at your heartstring. But they're clever as well. They know which buttons to press, and she's going to know how to get a reaction out of you.
But the good thing is, I think it's really good that all of us have come.
Do you know something? I was just thinking then, I've gained an enormous amount of strength with just hearing everybody's story.
And me.
The Shared Experience with Fee Glover was produced in Bristol by Maggie Eyre.